Adam Schroeder, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I always say is that you can call me anything. Just make sure you call me. So
that's the same thing. My last name's Gawker. I'll answer to anything. It's one of those names. I knew that this album was going to be a hit. Like, I've listened to this. Now that it's been out for a week, are you, the response is fantastic. Are you excited about what you're hearing?
Yeah, I am honestly just so astonished. I mean, I believe as well that the record, the band itself, really did an amazing job of capturing that spirit of Clark.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Jazz, Blues, and R&B podcast and radio show, period. I am so excited. We have a great album called CT that I can't wait to get into. CT stands for Clark Terry. Band leader and baritone saxophonist Adam Schroeder teamed with arranger Mark Masters and they big band Clark Terry original compositions. Clark Terry passed away in 2015. He played with Count Basie and Duke Ellington, Quincy Jones, Oscar Peterson, and he was with the Tonight Show Band from 1962 to 72. His career spanned over 70 years, and as a leader, over 70-plus albums, I lost count. And as a sideman, I lost count on that too, thousands. He worked with leaders previous mentioned, along with Stan Getz, Dizzy Gillespie, Johnny Hodges, Milt Jackson, Mingus, and Herbie Hancock, Oliver Nelson, and then I basically just stopped writing it down. There's just too many. CT highlights 13 Clark Terry pen compositions. Before we get into the interview with Adam Schroeder, don't forget to like, comment, subscribe to the show, and then play it. And then if you're not digging the show, which I don't know why, to exit, and then turn that volume down so we get the credit for it. Check out the show notes for more information on this artist, along with Clark Terry, along with the podcast itself. First, let's listen to a Clark Terry composition called Argentina. It's a 1958 composition, and then we are going to segue into the current version, the Schroeder Masters recording. Welcome to the Jazz, Blues, and R&B podcast and radio show, period. This type of album isn't created that often because it doesn't really, like, jazz formats are so limited and, you know, they stick to that format. They don't want to scare anyone off. And so the flexibility of putting something that's a little more denser, a bigger band vibe, sometimes doesn't seem to fit in their playlist. This is what we're looking for. We're searching for.
Yeah, we wanted to make sure it wasn't a tribute album per se, but more of a celebration. I mean, the whole idea of the record or of the project was to celebrate Clark's 100th birthday and everything he gave to just so many people, musicians, students, benefactors, supporters around the globe for so many decades, and his activism in and out of music also. And so it's a celebration, and I'm glad that it's been able to be captured as such and not labeled as a tribute album, which we all know sometimes those fall flat. And it was a little bit dangerous, I guess, to go down this road. But I do believe that the musicians captured the spirit of what I was hoping to have done. So
I saw Clark Terry 3 times. He did a free show in Camden, New Jersey. It's by the water. It's really beautiful. Uh-huh. And I would go to see jazz shows. There's only 3 times that the place was packed, that they had to have security. It was Tito Puente, and it was Clark Terry, and it was Celia Cruz. It was a mob scene. And I'm like, who's this guy? When I was listening in the crowd, that I felt that genuine warmth coming back from the audience that I don't really feel a lot when I go to concerts. It's like, I can feel this, whatever this is. past fandom, people really responded to him as a human being.
He always had, I don't know if it was just a natural instinct or natural ability to just be so personable on and off the horn, draw you in and allow you to be present and be yourself in front of him while expecting that the music was taken care of seriously and demanding that you engage as a public. I mean, that's what I loved about every instance that I had with him. Is there was a moment at all times where the crowd was either singing back to us or he was having them do something. And it just brings that whole idea of a performance, that it's a collective atmosphere. We feed off of all of one another's energies. And so, you know, we did try and capture that. And I think we did a great job. And it's great to hear the press coming back and actually acknowledging that.
You have some young guys in your troupe. Yeah, I do remember him on the Tonight Show. And you know, he used to, Doc used to talk to him. He was kind of, there was a banter. And I remember his sailor hat, you know, like I know this guy. I have nothing but warm feelings about his performances. And, you know, when he's on a record, I'm like, oh, cool. I know I'm getting quality. So how do you like explain this to someone who, you know, generationally has passed?
You know, that's difficult. As an instructor at a university right now, we do have that necessity to try and acknowledge history and bring it forward so that the students see where the music has come from through these great contributors. And at the same time, these students sometimes just are so, I don't know how to say it. It's just strange that there's this sort of inhibition to not want to go backwards. But as soon as somebody hears Clark, they're like, oh, this is amazing. This is so happy. I can get into that spirit. And to me, every single great jazz musician has something like that can draw you in, that I do think everybody can connect with. And so that's what I try and focus on instead of teaching the history lesson, you know, getting students to read his book or getting them to listen to a portion of his discography or having them check out Mumbles, which that's been the most requested track. Like, did you guys record it? No, absolutely not. We're going to stay well away from his, you know, thing. So, but yeah, it's challenging. But I also think that if we let the music speak for itself, it'll also do the job that we're intending to do. And I think Clark modeled that to all of the players and students that he was around and blessed his time with. So
that's not the first time I heard that, where younger people are real reluctant to go backwards. They kind of feel like they're put in some kind of weird box, you know, like, oh, like that's old and I'm new, as opposed to this is a rich history. Let me play in it, you know? And I hear that a lot. We have the Peabody here and some of the teachers I've been interviewed in there, they were like, well, we would, at the minimum, we would want you to know Mumbles so you can go, you know, perform in a band, they're going to play it. And then you're like, you have that knowledge already at the minimum. You know, you're going to be asked to work and you're going to need to know the classics.
That's exactly what I was talking with about yesterday with another colleague. Exactly what you just said. It's the bare minimum.
It's a bare minimum. Now, let's listen to the title track of the 1957 Clark Terry Riverside recording, Serenade to a Bus Seat. And again, and we are going to segue into the CT version. Take a break from the action. You're listening to the Jazz, Blues, and R&B podcast and radio show, period. And we're chatting about CT, a loving, banging tribute. It's a reimagined, recorded from Adam Schroeder and Mark Masters. Yeah, yeah. He's kind of in that late 50s, early 60s, Mark Terry. Before we go, was there any kind of like personal interaction with him? Did you see him live?
Yeah, I mean, the full story in a very condensed version is Clark at the time had a jazz school at Takeo Westmore University, which was in Lamar's, Iowa, just north of Sioux City, Iowa. And my senior year, I just switched to baritone sax, but I'd already been involved, and I can't remember the capacity, with the organization that Clark had kind of started up there. I know I was taking lessons with the saxophone teacher, David Glasser, who was flying in from New York. And the interaction with Clark at that point was he had this college big band and they needed some other players to round out the big band. They needed two trumpets, alto, baritone, and a bass trombone. And so one of his teachers called down to the high schools in Sioux City and said, hey, send us, you know, students that you think would be great to fill in. And so we started driving up every Wednesday night to rehearse with the college band, and Clark would fly in a couple times during the semester, as well as numerous other guest artists. And that's where I first interacted with him. And from that, you know, he offered a scholarship to go to the school that he had. And once the school unfortunately disbanded due to the institution it was affiliated with cutting the funding, he was very proactive in finding us a home, and most of us moved down to Texas. And at that point, he called for what he termed Clark's kids, which was a sextet of musicians. We ended up doing a couple of jazz festivals. We did the Queen Elizabeth II, the jazz cruise. And then he formed Clark Terry's Young Titans and Big Band, which was actually an offshoot of his younger version of the Big Bad Band. Branford Marcellus was in that original organization. And things just started happening over and over and over again. And, you know, if we were around one another, he'd constantly ask us to show up at his gigs and allow us to sit in or demand that we sit in just to get our feet, you know, more wet. Phone was always on. It became just a wonderful relationship that I probably took for granted at the time, not realizing how special it was, but I do know that he did this for everyone that he felt, you know, deserved that. And so to think about how small, but yet how vast that world of mentorship is and how many people he touched, is just truly amazing. Like I mentioned in the liner notes or in the press release, I can't remember where it said, there's not a day that goes by that I don't actually think about him. I mean, he's just there in my life at all times because I'm trying to model and give back as he showed me how to do, not just through our words, but through the musicianship and the music and camaraderie. And so, yeah.
I think that's an amazing story. That's amazing. That's, I can see it. I can see him, like, you know, doing that. It's pretty awesome. And what a great experience for you. I mean, really, if you look back at it, like, there are so many people who don't have that touch of brilliance, but also humanity attached to it. Pretty impressive that you were able to find that mentor that just kind of evolved. I mean, it could have never happened. It's very sliding doors.
I really owe everything to CT. I mean, if he hadn't opened that first door and offered that place to really explore the music and be around musicians who were so dedicated to the craft of everything involved in that, the jazz as a whole, I don't know that I'd actually be a saxophonist or be where I'm at. I have no idea. I don't know what that road would look like, but because of his, you know, the crossroads where I met him at and what he offered, it did just completely open my mind and my heart to something that I still am just beyond amazed with.
Let's end this interview with one more comparison. Let's check out Clark Terry's Boomerang. It's from 1957. It's also an album track from Serenade to a Bus Seat. And then we're going to try out the CT version. We'll be right back. Now you've been through many audiences. When I talk about this, like Love Fest, where the audience is radiating something, some kind of energy back. It was something that when I was a young jazz fan. So, you know, you go to the jazz things, some things work for you, some things don't, you know, it's the way things are. But when it came to a Clark Terry show, I was like, there's something going on here. And it was very connective. So even if they're sitting in the lawn chairs or they're sitting wherever there was, I felt that something different was happening. And I'd never really experienced that before. And is that something that you felt when you were working with him?
100%. Yeah. And I think you can listen back to any of his recordings, any of those interactions that he's played as a sideman on recordings as well. Watch the videos. You can see it in the audience faces. You can feel it coming through the music. He had this innate ability to just draw everyone in, and the ability to have everyone present in the moment was unbelievable. I mean, a pin drop, you could literally hear a pin drop every time he took the stage. And just from the time that I spent in the Young Titans big band, the way he got to the stage, took the stage, announced the first tune, I mean, welcomed everybody to the room and then announced the first tune and then played the first note. It all led to that almost big musical hug moment that just opened everyone's hearts to, this is going to be a great night. And we're going to walk away remembering something, not remembering that the pasta was great or that the ticket price was X number of dollars or that it took 40 minutes to get to the show or that I got a chance to take a selfie with so-and-so. You remember the whole night because of that energy that was going on. So yeah, you're not alone. I think
if I talk about Clark Terry, I tell that story.
The goal, it has my name in the title, but the goal is actually the music. It's about Clark. It's a celebration of him and the band. If the band wasn't there, the record would not be here. So
yeah.
I can't take credit.
Yeah. Let's hope it gets to as many ears as possible. It's fantastic. All right. Well, I thank you very much.
Sounds good. Thank you very much, Tom.
The Jazz Blues and R&B Podcast and Radio Show, period, is available on radio format. It's more talk and more music. It's a 30-minute show. It's found on thebox.com, where you can listen to it on Thursdays at 7 and 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check the show notes for info. You'll love thebox.com. The show is over, and have a great day, period.